Al will be forever the myth.
You're the king of kings, Al.
There's always a pecking order. Little peckers never mess with the big peckers. So I'm a rooster, and he's a chicken.
This episode of the Bodybuilding Legends podcast is brought to you by our Patreon sponsors. If you're interested in becoming a Patreon sponsor yourself, please go to the website bodybuildinglegendsshow.com, and in the upper right-hand corner, you will see the link to become a Patreon sponsor. All right, welcome everybody to another episode of the Bodybuilding Legends podcast, where we talk to the legends of bodybuilding, and we also talk about the history of bodybuilding. I'm your host, John Hansen. On today's show, we have one of our favorite guests, Rich Gaspari. Rich was one of the top bodybuilders in the 1980s. He was the very first Arnold Classic winner in 1989, and he was second at the Mr. Olympia 3 years in a row from 1986 to 1988. And Rich has just had a documentary made about his life. So we are going to talk to Rich today about that documentary, about what else is going on in his life, and a little bit of bodybuilding history, and we caught up. I've known Rich for many years now. I always felt kind of a kinship with him because we were born on the same year. I think we're only like 2 months apart. So we'll both be hitting that big 6-0 mark next year. But Rich and I have a lot of similarities. We both started bodybuilding around 13 years old, 14 years old. We were both inspired by the superhero comic books as kids. And I think we both started competing at 16 years old. And of course, Rich had a fantastic career. He won his pro card in 21 years old. He won the IFBB Mr. Universe contest and the light heavyweight class. And he also won the light heavyweight class at the Nationals that year. And then he went on to become, as I said, one of the best pros in the 1980s. He ushered in a whole new criteria for conditioning with his ripped glutes. And he was very thick and massive, but also extremely vascular and ripped every time he competed. And he was just a fantastic bodybuilder. So Rich went on to start Gaspari Nutrition after he stopped competing. And now he has a very successful company that's been going on for probably over 20 years. And he's also a sponsor at many of the bodybuilding competitions and a judge. Well, he used to be a judge, no longer a judge. But yeah, Rich has had a fantastic career in bodybuilding. So it's always great to talk to him and catch up on what's going on. So we will have that interview with Rich in a minute. Yeah, it's been a few weeks, I think, since we did a Bodybuilding Legends podcast. I was just having trouble finding some guests. We do have someone pretty exciting next week, hopefully. I don't want to say anything just in case he cancels, but it's somebody that we've been wanting to talk to for a while. So stay tuned for that. Hopefully that'll be coming up next week. I do want to apologize for the audio on that Joe Abenda interview that we did the last time, which I think was like 3 weeks ago. Joe did not want to do a video, so we were not able to do it on Zoom like we usually do. So I had to use my phone, and came out okay. You could hear him all right, but I know I sounded like I was underwater, so I apologize for that, guys. But we have not done interviews just by audio alone using my phone for a long time. And we were not able to get my computer working. So I had to actually use my cell phone, and it just didn't work out at all. But hopefully you're able to understand it okay. And Joe was a great interview, and it was great talking to him. 1962, Mr. America. So that was a great interview. We don't have any emails this week, of course, because we haven't been on for a few weeks. I do have a couple of people in the fitness and bodybuilding industry that passed away that I really have to mention. The first was Jim Lorimer, who passed away at the age of 96. And Jim has been in a nursing home for a while. He lived a very, very long life. But of course, Jim really made an impact on the bodybuilding world. He was a fascinating person. He was the mayor of Worthington, Ohio. He's from Columbus, of course. But Jim was also one of the top executives at an insurance company. I can't remember the name of it right now, but it was an insurance company out in Ohio. And he was one of the top executives there. He was also an FBI agent. So as I said, Jim had a really fascinating life, but we all know him as the partner, the business partner of Arnold Schwarzenegger, and they began promoting competitions together in 1976 when they did the Mr. Olympia in Columbus, Ohio, and I was lucky enough to see the Mr. Olympia from 1977 through 1979 that Arnold and Jim promoted, and those memories of those competitions will live with me forever. They were some of the most exciting and fascinating competitions ever. I mean, they were just so well produced. The magic, it was just magical to see those contests, and I'll never forget them. And the contests today just don't even come close to the atmosphere that those Mr. Olympia contests in the late 70s had. It was just amazing. The crowd, the atmosphere, the set designs, the lighting. It was really, really an amazing show. Jim and Arnold went on to promote many other bodybuilding shows in Columbus, and then they finally started the Arnold Classic in 1989, which has now become the Arnold Sports Festival. It is still going on, and it is one of the biggest sports festivals in the world. So it's just a monster. It's a huge competition. And last year was the first year where Jim was not involved. The Lorimer family was not involved. Arnold got a new partner, and it just wasn't the same. The hometown atmosphere that Arnold Classic always had just wasn't there anymore. Hopefully the Arnold Classic will keep going, but Jim Lorimer definitely left his mark on the sport. He first met Arnold in 1970 when he promoted a competition for the AAU. Of course, this was way before the MPC, and it was called the Mr. World Contest. Jim had promoted some weightlifting competitions. The weightlifting and the bodybuilding back then in the AAU was connected. So every time there was a Mr. America contest, they also had the National Weightlifting Championships along with it. And if they had the Junior Mr. America, then they had the Junior Weightlifting Championships. So they were always connected. And so they were going to hold the World Weightlifting Championships in Columbus, Ohio. And this was a significant event because this is where the Russian weightlifter Vasilia Alexiev, and if you're older like me, you probably remember Vasiliev. He was a crazy looking guy with a big stomach, but by far the strongest weightlifter in the world at the time. Vasiliev lifted 400 pounds over his head, and that was the first time this was ever done, and he did it at the 1970 World Weightlifting Championships. So Jim also promoted the Mr. World Contest along with the World Weightlifting Championships, and he not only had an amateur division, he also had a professional division, which was something unheard of with the AAU, because the AAU prided itself on being a totally amateur organization. But somehow Jim was able to promote the professional Mr. World. And this was the historic contest where Arnold first beat Sergio Oliva. Arnold, of course, lost to Sergio the year before at the 1969 Mr. Olympia. And now in this contest, Arnold beat Sergio. And this was 2 weeks before the 1970 Mr. Olympia, where Arnold again beat Sergio and became the new Mr. Olympia. And it was also covered on Wide World of Sports back then, which was one of the first bodybuilding competitions. It might have been the first bodybuilding contest ever covered by Wide World of Sports. So Jim Lorimer, an amazing man. He was a really great person. He was great to everybody he met. He was a real gentleman, very articulate, very well-spoken, a lot of class. He really stood out in the bodybuilding world. So we will definitely miss him, but he lived a long and very fruitful life. He had a family, he had kids, and he had grandkids, and just an amazing person. So all best wishes to Jim Lorimer's family, but we will always remember the impact he made on the sport of bodybuilding for sure. We also lost another friend of mine, Eric Fleischman, who was called Eric the Trainer. Eric was out of California. I met him at the Powerhouse Gym in Florida when I moved here to Tampa, because the owners, Matt and Eddie, they knew Eric from back in California because that's where they're from. And Eric was just he was a trainer to the stars, sort of. He trained a lot of Hollywood people. He had like long blonde hair. One of the most positive and upbeat people I think I've ever met in my life. He was just always pumping you up. He always had great things to say about everybody he met. He was just so happy and so positive all the time. I remember about 5 years ago, they had the Fit Expo, which is usually held in California. Iron Man Magazine used to be a part of that. I don't know if they still are. But the Fit Expo is always held in Southern California. And for 1 year in 2017, I think it was held in Orlando, Florida. So Eric called me up and he wanted me to be a part of it. He wanted to bring four Mr. Olympia champions on stage, and they do kind of like a mini seminar. It didn't last long, maybe 10 minutes or so. So he had Jay Cutler. He had Dexter Jackson. He had Danny Hester, who was the first classic physique Olympia champion. And he had me. And I was like, well, I'm not really a Mr. Olympia winner. I've won the natural Olympia. But he's like, no, you're an Olympia winner. So he was just so adamant about having me up there. And it was so cool that he brought me up there with Jay Cutler and Dexter Jackson. I remember they were kind of looking at me like, what's he doing up here? But Eric, he wouldn't hear of it. He just wanted me up there. He was so proud that I was natural Mr. Olympia. He would introduce me to all his friends as natural Mr. Olympia. He was just such a great, positive person. I believe he just married his girlfriend last year. And I think Eric was only in his late 40s. I think he was like 46. Don't quote me on that. But unfortunately, Eric committed suicide. He actually shot himself in the head with a gun. So it's tragic. It's unbelievable. All my friends, Matt and Eddie from the gym and all of us, we just can't believe it because he was so positive. And everybody who met him said the same thing. He was just such a positive person. So he obviously had some inner demons he was struggling with or going through. I don't know why he did what he did, but it was confirmed by the coroner's office in California that that's how he died. So rest in peace, Eric. He was a really, really positive person to everybody he met, and he made a great impact on everybody, and we're all going to miss him. All right. In other news, I went out to the NPC Nationals in Orlando last weekend. I went out to see that. It was actually the 40th anniversary because the NPC Nationals, which we'll talk about in our interview with Rich Gaspari coming up, it started in 1982, and that was the one that Lee Haney won. And Lee was there. I got a chance to talk to Lee for a little bit. And got a chance to see that contest. And there were some really good bodybuilders in there, but just didn't really have the atmosphere that I was expecting. The crowd was only about half full, not a lot of applause, and not what I was expecting with the NPC Nationals. But it is kind of getting watered down, and Rich and I will talk about that because they give out so many pro cards now. Mr. Olympia is coming up next weekend in Las Vegas. It's kind of late this year. It's 1 week before Christmas. Because they wanted to bring it back to Las Vegas. And I guess it's hard to get a venue in Las Vegas now. So they had to push it all the way back to December. But next year, the Mr. Olympia will be back in Orlando. And it'll probably be around September, October again. And then I believe it's going back to Vegas after that for several years. I think they have a contract for like 3 or 4 years. So that will be happening next week. I will not be out there, but we'll be watching it on pay-per-view like a lot of us will. We've got a seminar coming up with Lee Haney. I will give you guys some information on that as it gets closer. That'll be in Massachusetts, Sterling, Massachusetts. I was out there earlier this year, I believe it was in April, at Bruce DeRosa's gym. So that was a great seminar. Now we got Lee Haney joining me. So that'll be in January, I believe January 8th. I will give you guys some information on that as it gets closer. And Lee is always after me for the bodybuilding history. So I've been working on the book and I'm going to start putting together a curriculum to have a seminar at Lee's personal training certification program. And we're going to do it online. So I'll let you guys know about that if you want to be a part of that and take the course in bodybuilding history. And you'll have to take a test and then you'll be certified. So it'll be all official. So that will be coming up early next year in 2023. They also made an announcement that the Arnold Amateur, so at the Arnold Classic this coming year in 2023, they will not be having the Arnold Amateur competition. And that's indefinitely. They're going to not have that for a while. So I don't know if they're just not getting the response anymore from the competitors. Some people have speculated it's because of these articles that are going up in the Washington Post, which coincidentally are written by Desmond Butler, who is George Butler's son. He is a reporter for the Washington Post, and Wayne D'Amelio started talking to him and started telling him some bad stuff about what's going on with bodybuilding, with the deaths, all the drugs that are being used. So Desmond is now doing a series of articles on the Washington Post about how bad bodybuilding is. And they say this is maybe why the Arnold Amateur was canceled. So we will see what happens with that. Speaking of George Butler, they just released the book Pumping Iron again. I just got a copy of it. It was from Rick Newcomb, who we interviewed on the show last year. Rick, as you know, owns his own publishing company, and he sent me a copy of it, and it is beautiful. It is a brand new book of Pumping Iron. It's just actually reprinted. The publisher is Creators Publishing, and that is Rick Newcomb's company, and they reprinted the book Pumping Iron, and it is really, really nice. If you're like me and you've got the original copy from 1974, it's probably falling apart. So if you want to get the new copy, this is actually the updated version that they released in 1980. So it has Charles Gaines's additional chapters about the sport of bodybuilding in 1980, including women's bodybuilding and Arnold coming back and winning the 1980 Mr. Olympia. And it's got a foreword in the book, the new book, from Arnold and from Charles Gaines. So you might want to check that out. Or if you don't, you know, people who are new to the sport and have never read the book, it is now available on Amazon for like $20. So they can get a brand new copy of the book, Pumping Iron. It is really, really nice. It was great to see. So thanks to Rick Newcomb for sending that out to me. All right. That's our long intro. When we get finished with our interview with Rich Gaspari, I'm going to read an article from the December 1985 issue of Flex Magazine. It's called The Knee in the Back That Made Gaspari Rich. And it's written by Jeff Everson. And this was right after Rich competed in the 1985 Night of the Champions, where he took second place to Albert Beckles. And I believe it was right before Rich competed in the 1985 Mr. Olympia, where he took third place in his very first Mr. Olympia contest. So it's a really great article. And Jeff Everson was a great writer. So I will read that for you guys as soon as we finish our interview with Rich Gaspari. All right, so here we go. Here's our interview with Rich Gaspari, where we talk about this brand new documentary that he just had made about his life and about some other stuff, and we catch up on some old stories. Here we go. All right, welcome back to the Bodybuilding Legends podcast, and we have a very special guest with us this week. My friend Rich Gaspari is back, and Rich has a new documentary out, so we want to talk to him about that. Hey, Rich, how you doing?
Good, very good.
Getting ready for the holidays?
Yeah, again, well, not really. I'm not ready because I've been like traveling every weekend.
Yeah,
you know, for work. I was at the Nationals last week. This week, I'm going to for Gaspari Nutrition to San Diego to meet with an account. Okay. Next week is the Olympia, so I'm going to the Olympia.
Yeah,
and it's Christmas, so I'm trying in between get myself ready. And I guess you know that's the benefit of Amazon. You could buy, you don't have to go to the malls anymore. Shop,
right.
You know, buy everything online.
Yeah, it's kind of weird with the Olympia being a week before Christmas. It's crazy.
Yeah, I think the reason for that is, you know, when Jake Wood took over, I think, you know, they had that set to go, I guess, where it was at the the Orleans, and then they have the Las Vegas Convention Center. And I think that took years to get set up because before that was Mandalay Bay.
Right.
And from my understanding, what they told me, just to get a venue in Vegas takes like 3 to 4 years.
Wow.
To get a good date, September, October. The Olympia was always September, October. I mean, I competed, it was September, October. 1 year it was like early November, the first like week in November.
Yeah.
But it's never been, last year was in December, this year is in December.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think, and then I think what they're doing is to get that right venue date. Next year, it's going to go back to Orlando.
Yeah.
And the following year, well, they haven't said with the following year, but I think their understanding is to get it in Vegas, but in September, October.
Yeah, that's what I heard, too. I heard it's going back to Vegas after next year. So
yeah, so they're going to have it at the right time because, as I said, it took actually Robin Chang told me it takes 3 to 4 years to get it.
Wow, I didn't know that. Vegas.
Yeah. So if you want to have it, you know, show a certain size and places that are there, you definitely have to book it way in advance.
I think when they're going back, I think they're going to be locked in for a couple of years then. So
that's what I think they'll do. So then they have it in 20. Well, it's going to be, I can't believe it. 2023. Yeah. 2023 will be in Orlando. Then 2024 will be in Vegas. And then I guess from 2024 and 2025. States are like when you and I would probably not even imagine being in 2024.
I know. Mentioned the Nationals. You were out there last weekend, and I was out there too. And I was thinking that was the 40th anniversary because it started in 1982 when Lee Haney won in New York.
Yes,
and this was 20.
And I saw that show as a teenager. I went to
Oh, wow!
Yeah, I was in New York to watch Lee Haney win that show.
Oh, wow. Like,
who's this guy? You know, he just had that tiny waist and wide clavicle. I didn't even know him. You know, it's funny. I didn't know who he was then.
I didn't either. Yeah, I remember reading a magazine. I had no idea who he was.
Yeah, and, you know, he won that. And then, as you know, he went to win the universe And that's, you know, he turned pro to get third place in his first try in the Olympia.
Yeah.
And that's when I, you know, a year later, I moved to California, become friends with Lee Haney, and you know, history is what it was. Me and him together as, you know, still close friends to this day.
What did you think of that show, Rich, when you saw it as a teenager? I didn't know you went and saw it, but it makes sense because you were in New Jersey and it was in New York, right?
I was in Jersey. I was competing in teenage shows. And, you know, I heard about the Nationals because before, you know, before 82 or 81 is when NPC came about. In 80, 81, I competed at 15, 16. I competed in AAU.
Yeah.
There was no NPC. I think in 80, in 82, 81, and then in 82, I started competing in NPC.
Yeah.
Because I think, I guess, Jim Manu got like John Kemper to represent that area of New Jersey.
Okay.
I went there. I never stopped, you know, going into the NPC. But my first years competing was AAU because there wasn't an NPC, believe it or not. And when I went to see that show, they had it in Madison Square Garden.
I think so. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And that was amazing because they had it in Madison Square Garden. It was like, to me, it was a big deal to see that show. The guy who guest posed, you're good at remembering the guy's names. He was the guy who had Intensity or Insanity, the training.
Oh, Steve Mihalik.
Mihalik was the guest poser.
Oh, okay.
And he looked phenomenal at that show. I was like, wow, Steve Mihalik, you know, posed at that show. Looked great. I just remember, you know, Lee Haney winning that show. He really stood out, you know, in that show, as you could see, this guy was going to be a great bodybuilder. You know,
the quality of that contest was amazing. You look at all the classes, man. It was like the top 10 were really fantastic, you know?
Well, back then, as you know, like in all the shows, like into where I competed in 84, there were guys like, you know, Lee Labrada that was competing that didn't, you know, my year didn't win, but he was in that show.
That's
true.
There
were other guys, in that show that, you know, turned into pros, like Tom Terwilliger
was
in my class. You know, I don't know if you remember the guy who came second 2 years in a row, or actually won that class, and then when me came second, then he retired, was Moses Maldonado.
Yeah.
And, you know, seeing Moses Maldonado, I guess back then, if you guys, I don't know if your listeners know, there was only one way to turn pro, and that's win the Mr. Universe or World Championships. There were five pros in the entire world. Five pros. There was over 40
the whole
pros.
Year.
And in the whole year, five pros.
Yeah.
So when you won that, title, first of all, you won the Nationals, and then you went to the World Championships, which when I competed, it was in Las Vegas. There was, I don't even remember, I think there was over 100 contestants just in the, you know, light heavyweight class that I competed in. Because you had everyone from all over, India, Canada, Mexico, you had all these guys, Germany, Italy.
Yeah.
And it was really cool because it really meant something to win the World Championships. When you won the World Championships, and I remember because I won the World Championships and then I got my first guest posing, and believe it or not, it was all the way in Tahiti. That was my first guest.
Oh, wow. That's cool.
So to get to Tahiti, first of all, I was 21 years old. I'm like, damn, I'm going to go to Tahiti. I went to Tahiti. To get to Tahiti, they had like a stopover in New Zealand. And when I stopped over in New Zealand, I was getting out of the plane for the changeover. And then someone came up to me, Rich Gasparri. I'm like, holy crap, this guy knows who I am.
Recognizes
me. And that's because it meant so much to turn pro at that time.
Yeah.
Today, you and I talked about it the other day. I think in the Nationals alone, they let every first and second place in each class turn pro. And there were seven classes. So there was 14 pros just in the bodybuilding.
Yeah.
And you told me there was eight classes in physique. There were 16 pros in the physique.
Right.
and then you had, I think it was five or six classes in classic. So you had another 10 to 12 pros.
Right.
So just the men's division, you had over 40-something pros just in that show.
I know.
You're supposed to know who these guys are.
Right.
No idea that. So they've diluted the whole value. I'm not saying anything's wrong with it. I mean, what today has done is there's a lot more pros. And then you got guys going in the Olympia. I don't know if you know this. There is I had two. I actually, Dan Solomon told me there was 600, but then Bob Chicarello was telling me it was like 480, 480
I heard too.
In the Olympia.
Yeah.
In the Olympia.
Yeah.
And they're worried about how long it's going to take. So there's guys qualifying. I'm not going to say anything wrong with it, but I mean, there's pro shows everywhere. So you got a pro show, in places, Indiana Pro, actually, that was kind of a show that people recognize, but there was just a show in Fort Lauderdale.
But they're all over the world. Yeah.
They're all over the place. And you got pro shows all over. I was just in Japan. They were given five, four invitations to the Olympia. So each class winner got to go to the Olympia in India. So the 212 got invited, who won the pro.
Mm-hmm.
The bodybuilding got invited, the bikini, and the figure. So they had four pros just in India. And then you had Japan that had another five or six that were able to go to the Olympia.
Yeah.
In the meantime, you also had all pros because they had the amateur Olympia with all these pros. So it was a lot more prestigious. I mean, the whole thing is as we talk, the cream rises to the top. So when you get to the Olympia, there's only those few guys that stand out.
Yeah.
I mean, Adi Chopin was one of the few guys that really nobody, I mean, I guess you heard about him. He came from like Iran and then he goes into the Olympia's first try, gets third place.
Yeah.
Just like that. That hadn't happened. John, how many years did that happen? It hasn't happened. It's always that has to build up to get to that place.
Yeah.
But you asked me about the Nationals. I don't want to disparage athletes. I think, it's great to see them compete. But I think you and I were discussing the only class that really was a good class were the heavyweight class.
Yeah.
You could say they look like, decent guys to turn pro that could have potential. As a professional, the other guys, I felt like they were at state level at best.
Yeah, me too.
Going back, say 20 years ago,
right? So or 40 years ago.
That's what I'm saying. I'm not sure where bodybuilding sometimes. I mean, you got to look at the guys that are up there in the top, Big Ramy, Nick Walker.
Yeah.
They're great bodybuilders and they're big. They're way bigger than we were. The size of these guys, but I think there's a huge gap, and this is what the issue is. When I turned pro the following year, I was in the Olympic game third place.
Yeah.
Today, there is nobody that wins the Nationals, North America, or any pro show, and then gets to be top five in the Olympics. It's very rare.
Right, right.
I mean, I don't think it exists right now. You got to build up.
Remember, Rich, how the guy who turned pro at the Nationals was usually the guy who won the Night of the Champions the next
exactly.
year.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah, they were that good.
Yeah.
Exactly. So
there were several years where it was the same guy. The guy who won the Nationals won the Night of the Champions, or was right up there at least, right?
Was right. Yeah. When I went Night of the Champions, I came second to a seasoned pro, Albert Beckles. But there were years like, I guess it was Sean Ray. Remember Sean Ray and Phil Hill?
Yeah. Phil Hill
won that show.
Yeah.
But I think Sean Ray won the Nationals, but then Phil Hill won the Night of the Champions.
And Gary Strydom
Gary Strydom, another pro that, what did he turn pro? He was winning USA's? Or?
86, and then he won the Night of the Champions in 87. So he went right in and won his first pro show,
So like you're saying to me, and I see the same thing, once they turn pro, it seems like those amateurs that got their pro card, it takes 2 to 3 years for them to catch up to the current pros that are competing.
Yeah.
Like guys like Labrada took them time. Guys like, Sergio Oliva Jr. Are still trying to get, claw their way up from.
Yeah. He's been at it for several years now.
He's been at it several years. So, and he's been, he's been improving.
Yeah.
But it's tough. So.
Yeah.
I just think there's a huge gap between the getting your pro card and then getting as one of the, being one of the top bodybuilders.
Yeah. Well, don't you think too, Rich, that it's because they give like two pro cards each class? Because like, let's say you got three good guys in the class. Two of them are going to get a pro card. So only one of them's coming back the next year.
Yeah.
Or we had like five good guys in the class. One would get a pro card and the other four would have to come back the next year. Plus you'd have those
And they would have to fight.
Yeah.
They would have to fight for that to win that show.
Yeah.
So that second place is usually was the guy to win, but maybe the third and fourth guy maybe improved, and maybe that guy came to win.
Right.
Then they had the guy to come back.
Right.
And
right.
It was much tougher because then the guy had to decide, the contestant had to decide, maybe I get my pro card at the North Americas. Maybe I get my pro card at the USA's.
Yeah.
That came a couple years after me. But yeah. You're right. Like the pros back then, that second place guy, it was really close. And that guy you knew was going to come back and get that pro card the following year. So now they give the first and second place guy.
Yeah.
So then there's like,
there's nobody left. Yeah.
Yeah. There's nobody left. You know?
Yeah, I remember like when Flex Wheeler turned pro, man, he looked so great when he won that USA. And they go, this guy's like a pro right now. He's gonna win a pro show. And he did.
It took him years to get that USA.
Yeah.
It took 2-3 years because he kept trying. And
he was second to Lerone. He was second to Matarazzo. You know, he kept getting second.
And then finally, when he did get his pro card, wow, this is a great pro. He's going to be a great pro.
Because he kept improving every year, you know, every year when he was trying, you know.
Yeah. So it's funny. Like you said, it's been it's very diluted, you know. And I see, you know, it's become a business.
Yeah.
What they're doing is, you know, with NPC, you have, you know, your fees to be an athlete.
Mm-hmm.
So that's how they survive, you know, the NPC organization. But now you have the pro cards that are more, I don't know what a pro card costs. What is it, like $300? You know what
it
is?
So. I think it's like $300 a year, yeah.
Yeah, so now you have to pay $300 a year.
Yeah.
And now you had 40 something pros just in the Nationals. They're all going to pay for their pro cards.
Right.
That's all going to come in, you know.
Yeah.
So it is a business. But as I said, the cream will rise to the top, and who's going to be the top Olympia competitors. But even the Olympia has been diluted because there's almost 500 or 600 competitors
going to
the Olympia. When I was in the Olympia, there was, you know, the most I think there was ever was 30 when I was in the Olympia. 30 contestants. That was a lot.
Yeah.
I was talking to John Romano about, you know, the Olympia. He goes, what was the only way to qualify for the Mr. Olympia? And then it was like, you had to win Mr. Universe.
Yeah.
It was all former Mr. Universes.
Right, right.
There was no qualification with a pro show to get into Mr. Olympia. You won Mr. Universe, you qualified for Mr. Olympia.
Yeah, yeah. Which makes sense because the Universe was the top amateur in the world. Like you said, you were beating guys from Australia, China, you know, everywhere, England. So you beat all the top amateurs in the world. So you've gone as far as you can go as an amateur at that point, right? If you won that contest. So it makes sense that you can turn pro then, you know?
And I think that's what Joe Weider did with the Olympia, because once you won Mr. Universe, there was nowhere to go.
There's nowhere to go, right? That's why
he did it. And so then he came up with that concept of the Mr. Olympia to get past and present Universe winners to go against each other.
Yeah.
So, John was saying, now, to be a Mr. Olympia competitor, what did you have to be? And I was thinking about it. I said, I guess just winning Mr. Universe.
Yeah.
And every single one of those guys that were on stage, because if you think about it, Robbie Robinson won Mr. Universe.
Yeah.
Danny Padilla won Mr. Universe. Mike Metz won Mr. Universe.
Right. Correct? Right.
I mean, I don't know if they let, you know, going back further, and you're a better historian, I guess they let the NABA Mr. Universes go into the Mr. Olympia,
but
they still have to qualify. When you're going back to the Arnold era.
Yeah, like Bertel Fox, I think he just came over. Although he did do the Night of the Champions. But then he wasn't placing well. Remember when he was doing the Olympia? He was never like, he wasn't winning. He was always like 7th, 8th, you know.
So later on, I guess, the NABA competitors, it was more like Wayne D'Amelia. He gave them a special invite
to
compete in the Night of the Champions.
You
had NABA guys going into the Night of the Champions, then if they would have done well, then they go to the Mr. Olympia.
Yes.
Another big name that I compete against was Eduardo Coac.
Yeah. He was another one. Yeah.
He was a NABA guy, and I competed against him in the Night of the Champions, and then Pro World, and you know, he went to the Olympia.
Yeah, he was like a legend in NABA because I think he won like 4 or 5 times. So
he was one of the biggest legends in, you know, as a NABA champion, but that really didn't do much.
No, it didn't help here. Yeah. And you mentioned Moses Maldonado, because he took 2nd at the Universe, so he had to come back, and I think that's when he was up against you, because I think he was 2nd in, like, I think he was 2nd in 82 when Haney was in it, and then he had to come back in 83, 84. He never turned pro, you know, because he never won the Nationals again.
He won the nat. I think he won the Nationals in 83.
83? Okay.
83 and went to the universe.
Yeah.
In 83. Who won in 83? That was the year. Maybe I'm wrong. I'm not sure now.
I think he won it. I think he was on the team with Lee Haney. So that was 82.
Oh, that's 82.
And he got 81. Second. Yeah. 82. Sorry. Yeah. And then he came back in 83 and 84, and he never won the universe. He got second. Or he never won the Nationals again. He never won.
Never won the Nationals.
Yeah.
So that's what I'm saying about
it. He lost his chance. Yeah.
A guy like that today would have been pro.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
He would have been pro.
He would have been pro the first time out, right? Yeah, well, the one guy that really freaks me out was Phil Williams, because Phil won the overall at the Nationals, and he goes to the universe, and he got second to Gromulus, who you beat the year before.
Yes.
And then he never turned pro because
– He never turned pro?
Well, he did like 3 years later, but –
He was in the 88 Olympia. I went against him in the 88 Olympia. So
he didn't do the Olympia, but he did the Chicago Pro.
He didn't do the Olympia in 88?
No. They were saying he should have, but he never did it.
So he won the overall.
At the 85 Nationals.
But then Gromulus beat him.
Yeah, yeah. And then he kind of went into a depression, and he's like, I don't deserve a pro card. You know, he's so hard on himself. He's like, I don't deserve a pro card. And he never competed for the next 3 years.
Wow. I was trying to figure out what happened to him, because he was a great bodybuilder.
He was a great bodybuilder, yeah.
And he beat
Ron Love, and he beat Lee Labrada at the Nationals. And the next year at the Night of the Champions, Labrada wins the Night of the Champions, and Ron Love takes second. So you know Phil Williams would have won, right?
Yeah.
If he would have been able to go on the Night of the Champions, he would have won.
I see him I guess he's got a podcast now, and he's been posting a lot of history.
Yeah.
He follows me on social media. I didn't really know him that well, you know. I mean, he seems like a great guy. Have you ever had him on your show?
Yeah, I have several times. He's a great guy. He's got some great stories about the old days.
Yeah, so he's another guy from, like I said, I thought he was in the 88 Olympia. I think he was going to maybe contemplate going in it, and then he didn't go in it.
Yeah, he won the Chicago Pro like 3 weeks before. He beat Stridham. At the Chicago Pro, his very first pro show, he beat Stridham.
He didn't want to go in the Olympia.
The Olympia was 3 weeks later, and he goes, you know what he told me? He said he was at Gold's Gym working out, and Robbie Robinson was in there, and Robbie took his shirt off and hit a frontal bicep, and he goes, ah, fuck, I can't compete against that.
I was there too, and I saw him.
Yeah,
and I was, you know, my cocky self, and I was, you know, I took my shirt off. I was posing in front of him.
Psyched him out too.
Yeah, so I remember doing that as well. Like I was. I saw him and I go, oh, this guy, he's going to, you know, I was training in Venice, and, you know, Robbie was there, Stridham was there, Barry DeMay was there. That was there was a lot of energy.
I was in
one of the rooms, and he came in and he saw me training, and like, you know, and I'm just, I was Rich Gasparri, that cocky Rich Gasparri. Fuck this guy. I'm not, you know.
So, you probably psyched him out.
Yeah, that's what I was told.
Well, it's funny because he was psyched out by Robbie, and Robbie ended up like 16th in the contest. He wasn't even
the show. You know? Isn't that unbelievable? I mean, Robbie was also just a phenom from what.
Yeah, yeah.
He was my boyhood. I just posted. Someone put it on there, a picture with me with Danny Padilla.
Padilla,
and I just posted it out there, and people like, ah, he was great. He should have won the 81 Olympia.
Yeah.
Yeah. He was such a. And I remember just seeing him that he was such a great bodybuilder. And I found that picture. I didn't even, John, sometimes it's such a blur of the people I met. And I didn't even know I, you know, took a picture with him. You know,
right, you remember that, right?
Yeah. It's so much, you know, so much happened, you know, in my life that a lot of times, a lot of it is a blur from
what happened.
Like,
yeah.
But it goes to you guys, you told me about my documentary.
Tell me about that. How did that all come about?
So this guy came to me and he goes, I'd love to do a doc. You know, he goes, I'm a videographer, you know, a filmmaker. I like to do a video. I like to do a documentary on you.
Mm-hmm.
Did one on, it was called The Wrestler. You know, it's not the movie with, what's his name? Whatever the movie. Mickey. But it was another movie he did. And he goes, I want to do a documentary on you. Can I do it? I go, what does it entail? He goes, well, I'm going to follow you around probably for like 2 years.
Wow.
Follow you around.
2 years.
So he followed me around for like 2 years and got, you know, got a lot of, you know, stuff from me, just what I'm about, my attitude, you know, I mean, what do you think of me when you say Rich Gasparri? A lot of it has to do with, you know, a hardworking guy.
Yeah.
That goes through adversity, that never gives up.
And right.
That's what kind of the film was about. It was just about me, the guy that goes through things that happen, but then come back and do everything they can and always have a positive outlook. And, you know, it's funny, John, I was there as a person looking at it, and he didn't let me see it.
Oh, really? Oh, wow.
No, the first time was at the theater.
That's cool.
And this was with Kevin Smith, the guy who made Ben Affleck famous.
Yeah.
He's got a film festival, Smodcastle Film Festival, that was in Atlantic Highlands in New Jersey. And it was the first time I got to see myself. And I got motivated by myself because I'm listening to myself, you know, as the 20-year-old kid, 25-year-old kid, you know, 35-year-old businessman, 40-year-old businessman, 50-year-old.
Yeah.
And I watched, you know, and all the things that happened, you know, talked about, you know, my setbacks from, you know, divorce to bankruptcy to coming back. So it's if you're looking for something to get you like motivated, that's what my film is about.
Yeah.
He's still farming it out on streaming video.
Okay. You know,
he got offered to put it on Hulu, but he's waiting to put it on another streaming video. So he'll let me know when it gets out there. So that I'll let you know where it's going to be.
Yeah.
But,
so he had clips of you, Rich, when you were younger, and then he put all that in the.
Guy found clips of me from winning the pro world.
Yeah.
That I thought were lost.
Yeah.
You know, winning the, you know, universe, videos of me, you know, going for the golds, videos of me, you know, throughout the whole time that I, and Gasparri Nutrition, you know, was. So, yeah, he found a lot of stuff online that he put out there. A lot of stuff was, like, fuzzy because it was old, you know,
stuff
on me. But, yeah, it was a lot of, you know, just listening to me as that aspiring 20-year-old kid or a guy who just started Gasparri Nutrition and talk about this business I started and what it was about. So it was kind of cool to see, you know, all these different, you know, just stages of my life that that he got about me. And, you know, my daughter came, you know, she's 15. And she goes, I know everything about you. And then when she watched, she goes, I didn't know this and I didn't know that. You know, you're not going to know everything, you know, about, you know, her father.
Yeah.
It was good to have that. And people that saw it were, you know, motivated by it. So, you know, look for it. It's called Gasparri. You know, it won through a bunch of different documentaries because Kevin Smith, basically, they had a lot of them submitted, like hundreds of documentaries that were submitted to Kevin Smith, and he picked that video.
Oh, okay, you know, cool.
So it was like a big deal. It was like best video. I'm sorry, best documentary.
Yeah,
so that was out there. I mean, he had like horror movie, documentary, all different categories.
Different categories, yeah.
So
when this guy followed you around, was he like going to work with you, going to the gym with you, everywhere?
Yes.
Yeah.
Where I traveled. One of the things, he started this, we were sponsoring the Amateur Olympia.
Okay.
And it was the year of the pandemic. So 2020 is when he started. So when he started this, it was like an anomaly to go to this show. And we were talking, you know, I had my big sign up there. And I said, you know, 100,000 people would walk down this hall. There's nobody here with my big sign, you know, this is great nutrition.
Yeah.
You know, and he had all the competitors. And then you look at the audience, there's nobody
there.
It was just weird. It was really weird. And, you know, I talked about this is one of the biggest shows, but right here, like there's nobody here to watch this. It's like, it's actually scary. But that was the beginning of the documentary, was during that, you know, pandemic.
Mm-hmm.
And then it went from there, you know, getting up in the morning, you know, talking about little things that I, you know, things that I do, like the first thing that I do in the morning is make my bed. I always talk about it's the first accomplishment of the day. You know, talking about, you know, I what my father instilled in me was hard work.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, my dad was a mason, but I was like, it's not the work I wanted to do. You know, it's
right.
It's not the hard work I wanted to do. And but, you know, I know that whatever I do, it has to be hard work in whatever I was doing, which was, you know, competing or starting, you know, a supplement business. But still, I got the same idea that that hard work is what builds success, not just nothing's by luck.
Yeah.
You make your own luck
in life. Yeah.
That's kind of what the, you know, the documentary's about.
That's awesome. Yeah.
I don't know if you know that you saw in the news now that they're not running the Arnold Amateur.
Yeah, I just saw that yesterday. Yeah.
It's in, and they said indefinitely.
Oh, really? Well, not just 1 year.
And I don't know if you know the reason why.
No.
I believe it has to do with all the stuff that's going on with the NPC right now with
those articles. You know,
Washington Post and, you know, talking, disparaging, you know, the whole organization.
Yeah.
And I know that's a bunch of crock. I think it's Wayne D'Amelio that's pushing that out. That's kind of has a chip on his shoulder because he got ostracized from
the
organization. And he's trying to, you know, they're trying to find dirt. And the guy who's doing it is George Butler's son.
Desmond Butler. Yeah.
Desmond Butler. So he's the one that got, that I guess Wayne got into his ear.
Yeah.
And they're trying to get everything from, you know, a sexual scandal.
Yeah.
With all the women to.
And the one they had this week was about the coaches and how the coaches are killing people. Yeah.
They're killing people. And I think that's the reason why they're not running the Arnold Amateur.
Okay.
That he said indefinitely.
I'm surprised they didn't just cancel the Arnold altogether, you know?
I don't think he wanted to do that because there are other sports involved.
Oh, yeah, that's true. That's true. It's a whole sports festival, right?
Yeah, the whole sports festival, I think, is something that he wants to still contribute.
Yeah.
But it's kind of sad because, for me, it's always been about, you know, Jim Lorimer and Arnold.
Yeah.
And I knew Jim, as you know, he just passed away at 96 years old. And I knew him very well. I knew Bob Lorimer very well. I love those guys. They were good to me, but I don't know what happened. Maybe you know better, but I heard there was a fallout in the relationship.
That was sad to see too. I went to the Arnold last year, and it wasn't the same without Jim Lorimer there. You know.
Yeah. Yeah.
It just felt different. You know.
And not Bob. Well, it was more Jim that was always like that.
Yeah.
Guy who. I remember when he ran the show.
He ran everything. You know, he was in control of everything. He was like, and he was such a nice guy too. You know, he was so.
You remember like the day he ran the show and he goes, okay, the following year, we got 365 days, you know, 24 hours, 363 days, 24 hours.
Yeah. Get ready for the next one. Yeah. Yeah.
The next one. And we were already preparing for the next one to make it great.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, he was such a classy guy, too, in this sport. You know, he really stood out and so well-spoken and just such a great – and his history, you know, I'm writing a book about the history of bodybuilding right now, so I'm going back. And he's been involved in the sport for a long time. He promoted the 67 Mr. America in Columbus that Dennis Tinerino won. So going back then, And then
– is that the AAU?
Yeah, the AAU, yeah. And then he did the AAU Mr. World, and that was the famous one where Arnold competed against Sergio. And that's where the one where he flew Arnold and Franco and Dave Draper and Boyer Coe. He flew them from the NABBA Universe in London over to Columbus the next day so he could compete in the Mr. World.
Wow.
And Arnold, Arnold was so impressed with that. He told him, he goes, wow. He goes, when I start promoting shows after I retire, he goes, I want you to be my partner because – you got it all together, man. It's like unbelievable how you organize that whole thing, you know?
Yeah. So it was something that was like to have him out of the sport. It's just another part of the legacy of bodybuilding that's gone, you know?
I know. It's hard as we get older because we're seeing all our guys that we grew up admiring, like Bill Pearl just passed away too a couple months ago, you know? And it's like, God, we grew up admiring these guys and now they're all passing away, which is, I guess, you know, everybody gets older, everybody dies, but it's
everyone dies. It just shows your mortality. Listen, we're both the same age.
I know.
It was our mortality. It's like next year I'm going to be 60. I'm like,
I'm
going to be 60, you know? And
I know.
I've seen stuff of you. You still look great. You know, I'm trying to recovering from, as you know, I had a surgery. I had an artificial disc.
Yeah.
I retired because I ruptured a disc in my neck, my right side.
Yeah.
Got all messed up. And I never fixed it because I didn't want to fuse my neck.
Yeah.
So when they told me about this artificial disc surgery, by the time I had it done, that nerve has been compressed for the last 25 years, you know, mm-hmm. and the disc was all like, it was all calcium, you know, so the guy, the doctor had to clean everything out, yeah. open up the, you know, the spinal column, put in this Space. Artificial yeah. disc. And, but I'm able to, you know, I'm able to have full, my neck is, you know,
yeah.
I didn't want to be like guys who are like this. They can't move.
I know.
Necks.
I know.
But it's still taking time for my right side to come back. And it's.
Oh, it is. Perfect. Yeah. Yeah.
It's because even though the nerve is free, the nerves that come out, they're like branch out to the brachial plexus. Those are being blocked because the muscle has like scar tissue.
Oh, okay.
And I'm having like physical therapy done to try to free the nerves. So little by little, it's coming back, but it's
yeah,
very slow process.
Where's the scar tissue in the muscle around your neck? Like the trap?
Well, I got cut here. And then even though it was cut here, what he's explaining to me is those muscles where the nerves come out. He's telling me that those muscles are actually like tight where mm-hmm. there's like scar tissue. So those nerves, the nerve is free, the big branches, the big, you know, one branch is free, but then the other one's coming out.
Yeah.
Those are, I guess, stiff from the muscles being like tight.
Okay.
So it's like my lat muscle, my trap muscle, my tricep muscle.
Yeah.
My pec muscle, all those where the nerves go to those muscles, they
yeah,
need to,
yeah.
to breathe again. And little by little they are, I'm noticing a difference, but it's the first, the doctor just operated on me. He's just like, okay, just start training. And yeah. it was like, it's not coming back. Why is it not coming back?
Yeah. yeah.
Well, it was over 20 years, but just sucks. This, but you know, the whole moral to this story is it sucks getting old. That's <I know. laughs> It sucks getting old.
I know. Aside from the wisdom you get as you get older, I don't see any benefits to it.
Yeah. I said, what the fuck? This is not beneficial to me to get old. You know, and I don't want to be that old guy that you talk to. And,
right. Right.
And it's nothing we can do. It's, you know, yeah. you have two choices, grow old or die. So
right.
I prefer to grow old.
Still alive, you know? Right.
Hopefully
I did an interview with David Hawk, your old competitor last year. Yeah. And he's had two quad ruptures, like his quad tendon tore on both of his knees. One of them was when he was walking down the stairs. He didn't even trip, fall, nothing. He just walked down the stairs and the thing just popped. I'm like, wow. Holy shit, that's scary, man.
And that, you know, it's, I see you training pretty heavy and yeah. I still like my leg training. I can train really heavy. Like I can yeah. still, and it's not like it's heavy. I can still do 10, 11 plates in a leg press for 20, 30. And it doesn't bother wow. me.
Yeah.
I try not to put a lot of weight. I can squat like 315, but I don't like putting weight on my neck.
Yeah.
You know, because of the fact that, you know, the surgeries I had, yeah. I don't want to yeah. put that pressure on my lower back, but mm-hmm. I still do hack squats, leg press. And yeah. I don't have any problems. I still have, you know, strong muscle.
Yeah.
It's more the upper body, my right side, my pec,
yeah.
you know, yeah. which I had really good pecs when I competed, but now it is what it is.
Yeah. Yeah, I know. We do the best we can.
And, you know, still being out there and, you know, the wisdom we have is, it's true. We have a lot of wisdom
yeah.
and knowledge. And social media has changed, you know, a lot, the sport with, these young, yeah. inspiring kids listening to these relevant social media people yeah. at the time, but they don't listen to the guys like us that have, a lot of,
yeah.
Yeah, that have a lot of experience, you know, yeah. more so.
Yeah.
Because we're not as good at doing the social media as these
right, you know, right, people. Right.
As you know, there was just a recent, you know, Liver King that yeah. got exposed.
yeah.
With him saying he's like, natural, and of course the, yeah. his drug dealer came out saying, you know, he's buying you know, like
right.
You know, whatever he did in buying in steroids and growth hormone and all this stuff
yeah.
that he took
yeah.
which now he's finally apologized, you know. You're not getting that way just eating, you know, raw
right,
liver
right. It seems like social media, the more outrageous you are and the more different you are, then you stand out. You know, this guy had the beard, the abs. He's eating liver raw, you know, so people are like, that's what attracts people. But if you just yeah, do common exactly. sense stuff, nobody even listens to you, you know.
They're going to listen. They're right. like, oh, this guy's got the secret.
Yeah,
he's eating exactly. raw liver. He looks like a caveman. Right.
Everybody always looks for the secret. That's it. Yeah.
They're just, you know, anybody listening, there is no secret.
Right.
It's hard work.
It's just hard work. Right.
Time.
Yeah.
Knowledge
yeah.
and training, knowledge and diet, and hard work.
Yeah.
You know, any champion that's up there is there's no other way to do it.
Yeah.
Shortcuts. Like my dad said.
I learned. Yeah, exactly. It's funny because I don't know if I ever told you the story. When I was just getting into bodybuilding, I think I was like 13. I don't even think I was working out yet, but I was interested in muscles. I was interested in guys who had muscular physiques. And you know, because me and you are the same age. Back then, not many guys had muscles. You didn't even see muscles in the movies or anything, you know, no. or on TV. So I was watching
Steve Reeves. But
yeah, Steve Reeves, right. So I was watching Starsky and Hutch. Remember that TV show, Starsky
yeah.
and Hutch?
Yeah, yeah.
So they were going to bust this drug dealer, and he has his bodyguards come out of the back room, and they're bodybuilders, you know. And then Starsky goes, oh, no, we're going to get beat up or something. And then Hutch goes, no, they just take pills to look like that. And I didn't know what he meant. So I remember it was bugging me. So the next day I asked my dad, I go, what do you mean by that? My dad goes, my dad was like a dock worker, you know, like your dad, a blue collar guy, you know?
Yeah.
And he goes, well, I don't know anything about that. But he goes, I know you can't develop a body like that without a lot of hard work. You can't just take a couple of pills and get a body like that, you know?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So that instilled in me too, that you have to work hard to get this, you know?
Yeah, it's not just going to happen. But I don't know when the Incredible Hulk came out. Was that when we were like 13, 14?
Yeah, it was like 77, 78.
So we were more like
14, 16,
15. 15, 15, yeah. But that was the first time you saw like
a real bodybuilder. Yeah.
Yeah, bodybuilder, muscular, and you're like, right. Holy crap. And I told you my story that my best friend had a stack of magazines his father read. And then when I went into his basement, I saw these stack of muscle builder magazines. Yeah. And that was like, holy crap, these people exist that look like this.
Yeah, me too. That's what I thought. Yeah.
That's what happened. So those magazines changed my life, you know?
Yeah. They just re-released Pumping Iron. They got a new publisher and they re-released the book. And it's got a new a foreword with from Arnold and from Charles Gaines. So I just got it sent to me the other day. It was really cool seeing that book again, you know?
Really?
Yeah.
Wow, that book there, that was when did that come out? 76?
74.
74? I thought it was the 75 Olympia he was competing in.
Well, that was the movie. This is the book.
The book came before the movie?
Yeah, the book came out. It covered the 72 universe and the 73 Olympia, and then it came out.
Okay. I didn't read the book. I never read the
book. Oh, you never read the book? Oh, you got to get it. It's amazing.
Yeah, you got to get it.
Yeah. The writing was so good in the pictures and stuff. And I thought this would be a great way for today's generation of bodybuilders to see what the sport was like back then, you know, back in the 70s. Because they kind of brought bodybuilding out to the general public. They were the first ones to do that.
But don't you feel like the younger generation of bodybuilders did not look at the history like you and I, like I looked at history when I was a bodybuilder, when I was a kid, I looked at bodybuilding and some of the bodybuilders I looked at were no longer competing. I looked at guys like Larry Scott. You know, I was just 1 or 2 years old when he won the Olympia.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then there were guys like Steve Reeves and I saw John Grimmick and George Eiferman, all these bodybuilders that I looked at the history of bodybuilding as a kid.
Yeah.
Today, I just remember being at a gym. I was at, I don't know, one of the bodybuilding shows, and there was this really good looking classic bodybuilder, and he was from Egypt. And I said, wow, you got a really, you know, really nice looking physique. I said, you got a physique similar to Muhammad Mokawe. And he's like, who's that? I'm like, you're from Egypt. You don't know who he is?
Yeah.
I go, that was like a great bodybuilder from, you know, Egypt. He's one of the best bodybuilders that at the time. And he was a really small, you know, he was a short guy.
Yeah.
But had great muscle, great shape. And he's like, I never heard of him.
Yeah.
I'm like, okay, this guy's from Egypt. I never heard of him. So what I'm saying is the younger generation do not follow the history.
No.
Mm-mm. And it's just weird. So I don't know, like, even if this book comes out, will a kid read a book because they're more inclined to just look at social media?
Yeah, look at a picture on Instagram.
Look at an Instagram. And that's how you're going
to
get.
I'll have to promote it on Instagram in order to get people interested in it.
Yeah, you should probably get on Instagram and put excerpts from the book.
Yeah.
Small tidbits, because the attention span of today's kids are like 2 minutes.
I know. Don't you think, though, Rich, that's because there's no more magazines? Like you said, when you were young and you were reading about Grimmick and Steve Reeves, guys that were before your time, but you read about them because you read the magazines. You know, I remember like we just talked about Bill Pearl. Bill Pearl was kind of before our time, too, because his last show was 71. So he won all his titles before we even got into it. But I remember reading the magazine and I was like, wow, this guy was, you know, I had respect for him. You could tell by the way they talked about him. He was a legend, you know.
Yeah. You're right. It was Joe Weider that would talk about him.
Yeah.
When he made that comeback in 71 that he came back and won.
Yeah.
After not competing for a while.
Yeah. Yeah.
You're right. So that's how I got to know who Bill Pearl was.
Right.
I had the honor to be able to know him, talk to him, and be a friend of his, which is cool. I mean, you talk to him as well, and it's just cool to get to know
him. I was promoting a bodybuilding show in Chicago for a few years, and I flew him out from Oregon to give him a special award. I think that was 2011. So I'm glad I did that at the time, you know, because then I got the chance to do that while he was still here, you know. But I think at the time he was like 80, 81, man. He looked amazing. He looked like a 55-year-old guy. He was so big.
He lived to how old? 90?
He was 91. He would have been 92 this year. It was right before his birthday he died.
Oh, so 90, 91.
Yeah.
I mean, it's still a long life. But, you know, and I, you know, became friends with his wife, Judy, you know, sent me. I told you, he sent me his book.
Yeah, tell me that story. Yeah.
So what happened was, is, you know, like I said, I've known Bill Pearl, meeting him at shows, and he was a great inspiration to me because he goes, you know, you can still inspire and be able to be effective to bodybuilders, not only competing, but after bodybuilding. Since I was able to do that, you know, as a gym owner and as, you know, who I, you know, was writing books, and he wrote so many books. So he was always very much of an inspiration to me. So I never had his book, you know, that big book that he has. I actually had it there.
Keys to the Inner Universe, that real big one?
Key to the Inner Universe. And if you go to look to get that book on Amazon, it's still available on Amazon. It's in paperback.
Okay.
But I wanted to get the hardcover. You know? So I Facebook, you know, Bill and Judy answered and said, well, we don't no longer have a hardcover book. This is what they said to me. And that, you know, send us soft cover and Bill would be glad to sign it because I want to get, I have a book collection. I have Joe Weider, Ben Weider's signature, Bob Kenny's signature. I like collecting books with people that I knew in the sport.
Anyway,
so I send the book and I get the paperback version, the soft cover version, and I send it to Oregon, you know, with return envelope, to send it back with, you know, because I want a signature to put in my book collection. And to my surprise, when I get the book that comes back, it's a hardcover. So it's the really rare hardcover. And he says there are only, I think, like 10 of these around. And, you know, and we decided to give you one because of what you've been able to contribute to the sport. And I hope you didn't mind the book, the soft cover that you gave to us. We gave it to a, you know, fan, you know, in exchange. And we're giving you the hardcover book.
Yeah.
So it means a lot to me that they sent me this with a note. I don't know if Bill was already, you know, not, he didn't write. It was Judy that wrote the note.
How long ago was this, Rich? Was it this year? Or?
Last year.
Okay. Yeah.
Last year. Here's the book, the hardcover book.
Yeah. Yeah. That's awesome.
Oh, and, you know, if you remember this book.
Yeah.
They both signed it, you know, right here.
Bill and Judy. Okay. Yeah.
But what I cherish is the note.
Oh, yeah.
You know, you have here the acknowledgments to Joe Weider.
Right, yeah.
Here,
isn't it an amazing book, Rich? I was looking at that the other day.
This is a great book, and it's all, I mean, there's a lot of cool stuff of him, you know, with blowing up hot water bottles. And some of the really great, like, here, he looks great in this picture.
Amazing, here. Yeah, that was 71,
But the anatomy charts and
look at all those drawings.
Yeah, they're all cartoons. I wonder how long it took.
I think it took him four years.
It did take a long time, but this note I really want to cherish. It's something special that, you know, basically wrote to me. So, okay, so you asked what year it is. It's May 2020.
Okay.
2 years ago, May 22nd, 2020. Dear Rich, in 1978, when Key was first published, We had 1,000 copies made in hardcover. They immediately disappeared, but Judy and I had a few more printed at a later date for special occasions and special people. These are just about gone, but we would like to trade the book you sent for one of our hardcovers, then gift your book to someone not as special as you. Hope you don't mind. Highest regards. So this was written by, you know,
yeah,
by Bill himself and then Judy Pearl. So,
wow, that's awesome. Really,
yeah, to me to have this, just like,
oh, yeah, really, I would never get rid of that letter for sure.
So, you know, to my daughter is like, oh, what does that mean? To you and me, this is like,
yeah, yeah,
it's gold to have
priceless.
This.
Yeah, yeah,
it's priceless to have this, and you know,
absolutely, like
my collection of books. That's why I said, if I get the book, you know, the Pumping Iron book, I'd love to have like the author sign it.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah,
to have it.
Yeah,
and it's more, you know, it's a lot more special.
I've had Charles on my show a couple of times. He's a great guy and great writer too. Way to read the book. You'll be amazed at how good the
really?
Writing is. Yeah.
I'll get the book and then with your help, I'm going to try to.
Yeah.
I'll send the book to him and say, I'm a big fan. I love you to sign this book.
Yeah. He invited me to his house in Alabama. I guess he stays in Alabama for like 6 months. So he said, yeah, you have to come by and visit for the weekend or something. So I think I'm going to do it, cool. You know. Yeah.
Yeah, you should. You should.
Yeah.
You're not going to, you know what it is? These people, like you said, they're not going to be around forever. And it's really cool to have that connection. And I'm, you know, I hope the younger generation starts to see the, you know, the benefits of the past champions of what they can, what they can do for you. And it's, you know, I think it's up to us to push that out. Like, you know, I'm doing a lot more with social media to put, you know, a lot of my old pictures and what I did, but also what I'm doing currently and, you know, my training philosophies, you know, to put out there and, you know, how I dieted. It's, you know, there's a lot of so-called experts here that are giving really bad advice to these young aspiring
bodybuilders. Yeah.
Fitness girls, you know, I see people going on zero carb diets for months and months and months.
1,000 calories. Yeah.
1,000 calories. And I'm like, how are you going to gain muscle? You know, I helped this one girl, just like she had a coach, and I don't do coaching, but you know, I may start because it's like I'm looking at how many people are out there that are hurting others.
Yeah. Yes.
And it's almost like I said, maybe I should do some of this, you know, even though I'm really busy, and pick select people that I enjoy training that are really going to listen.
Yeah.
But this girl was on a diet, like 1,000 calories, 1,100 or 1,200 calories, zero carbs. I can't gain muscle. Blah, blah, blah. You know, and I'm like, because you're eating like a bird. You got to eat. So the first thing I did is like, she goes, well, I got to weigh myself. I said, throw the scale away.
Yeah.
Don't weigh yourself anymore. Because there's going to be a process of, you know what I'm saying? You're going to start gaining muscle and you're going to put on weight. If you look at the scale, you're like, oh, I'm getting fat.
Yeah.
So you can't really look at the scale.
Yeah.
You got to look at how you look and your appearance. And this girl is like gaining muscle now. And it's like, it's great to see like, wow, just my knowledge is helping this person.
Yeah.
And she's like, how do you know all this? Like I've been doing this. Like, to me, it's like brushing my teeth, you know, and I went to so many shows and I know how to diet for a show.
Right.
I'm not privy to, you know, today's bodybuilding drug cycles. I wouldn't know what to give anyone.
Right.
And
right.
I really don't want to know that, you know?
No. Yeah.
I want to stay healthy. You know, John, I want to, you know, at this time in my life, I want to stay healthy and live like Bill Pearl or, you know, these guys that have lived longer, you know, lived longer lives to contribute more. And it's not only about living longer, it's living a quality lifestyle, you know, not being in a wheelchair and not being sickly.
Yeah.
I don't want to be in those conditions, you know, I want to be healthy. And what can I do to be healthy from this point on?
Right.
So that's what I'm trying to do now.
Yeah. And like you said, I remember we talked years ago, I was trying to sell cars.
Yeah.
You're like, what are you doing? You know, you got like a doctorate degree in knowledge, you know, in bodybuilding from all these years, like you and I have both been in the sport the same amount of time. And it ends up being like 45 years we've been bodybuilding, you know, like you said, it's like brushing your teeth. It's like so common knowledge, but it's a shame not to share it with people. Because we've got so much experience and so much knowledge, you know.
And now you're doing your thing, right? You're doing.
I'm doing online coaching. Yeah, I'm working with.
So there you go. Like, you can't be doing something you hate doing,
right?
You need to make a living, and it's. Yeah. I know it's hard at first because you're trying to transition. Listen, I've always done what I love to do. I got involved in being a bodybuilder. And then from that point, I got into selling supplements because I've always loved everything about, nutraceuticals. But I don't know if you know this. I did the same thing you did. I went to go sell life insurance.
You told me that,
and I did it for one day. I took all the tests. I passed all the tests, on the insurance. And it was mortgage insurance. Like when you die, you get your mortgage insurance paid. And I went out on the road and I sold, I went on the road and I got to sell my first insurance policy to a, and this was me wearing a suit, going door to door with these leads. And then I came back to the guy. He's like, good news and bad news. He's like, what's that? I got our first sale, me selling my insurance, to somebody. The bad news is I quit. I'm out of here. It's like, there's no way I'm doing this.
I think I sold cars for like 2 months, and
You
then
were like, I'm not
I just
doing
went into his office and I go, I'm done. I can't do this anymore.
it. Because you got to do what you love, John. You have to do what you love.
Absolutely.
If you don't do what you love, even if you make less from what you're doing, if you do something that you love and it's your passion, eventually you'll start making more. And eventually you really don't call it work, right? It's not really work.
It's like quality of life, like you said. It's like you'll enjoy your life better. I mean, you know how many people are out there working these jobs they hate and they're miserable, just miserable every day. And life goes by so fast too,
Well, as we both know, we're both getting 60 and it's right around the corner.
I know.
It's going to be hard for me to all my competitive bodybuilders right now are all in their 60s. I'm the last one right now because I guess I was one of the youngest
You
in
were.
my era. Yeah, so
Yeah, you're right. Because Lee Haney, Lee Librata, Barry DeMay, they're all in their 60s.
on their 60s right now. So, and they all look great. You see, Lee Haney looks great. Lee Librata looks phenomenal.
Lee Librata's amazing, man. God,
Yeah,
that guy's still ripped.
he's ripped in great shape. I mean, if he takes, he's still in great. Barry DeMay in great shape.
He's in great
Bobby
shape.
Robinson, he's was he's a phenom. Like if you look at him now, I think he's like, is he 76, 77?
76. Yeah, he's a year older than Arnold.
So he's older than Arnold. And if you see him with his shirt off, he's shredded.
Shredded all the time. I know.
Yeah, it's still muscular. Who else did I see? Vince Taylor still looks amazing.
He's always gonna have those arms, man.
Yeah, he's got these huge arms. So it is something that they say about ageless, bodybuilding, keeps you young, the fountain of youth. It definitely keeps a lot of us much younger in how we look,
That's the whole point of the sport. And I don't know if you know this, but Lee Haney also is concerned about the history of the sport too. He asked me actually to come up with like a seminar where we could teach the history to his, he has that personal training certificate program. He wants me to teach like a course there, which people would get a course on the history of bodybuilding. They would
That
be like,
would be amazing. I mean, listen, you're a historian. You'd be the best guy to do that and go through from Steve Reeves and John Grimmick to the present. And there's a lot I didn't realize, until now. Like it was that golden era. Even I was in that golden era of bodybuilding because it's not a transition from the Arnold. In the Olympia, was there five, six competitors? And then
Or
it,
three,
when it,
two or
when they made
three.
it, yeah, there was some years like, I guess when Arnold competed in Australia, there's, I don't know how many competitors, there's like 15, 20 competitors. Going to the, it started really growing into the 80s with the Grand Prix and Mr. Olympia. And, there was so many more opportunities for pros and make a living as a bodybuilder who's at that time, that. I was living in that time that I was, I became a pro bodybuilder and made money being a bodybuilder. It was kind of cool. And then it changed. Of course, I think the height was bodybuilding is like right up to Ronnie Coleman, and maybe the first, maybe Jay Cutler kind of, but right up to, Ronnie Coleman is like where it kind of like that was the peak for me,
I miss those magazines too, man. We had those magazines when we were younger, and we all read them and we all learned so much from those, but those were the good old days, for sure.
Yeah, and it's and I think you're right. That's why the youth of today doesn't know anything about the past, because everything is on the current social media of these guys that are the most popular, and that's who the kids are following. So they're not reading a magazine and then seeing an article on Bill Pearl, like you said, or reading an article on, you know, Steve Reeves, or, you know, those bodybuilders. So that's, I think you're right. That's the reason why the history is gone.
Yeah. I think I mentioned, I had Rick Wayne on the show not too long ago, just like last month. And I remember Rick used to write these like 8-9 page articles about the Olympia, you know, when the Olympia report came out. It was like he kept reading and reading. He had all the information about everybody. It was so detailed. And sometimes it was 2 or 3 parts. You know, it was crazy.
Yeah, he was a great writer. And
yeah.
He was also one of the guys that I look up to. I don't know if you were ever at Weider's office. Have you ever?
No, I never had a chance to see
it. So you missed it. So you walk in there. It was a museum of bodybuilding. And right there was a staircase that went up. And right there was Rick Wayne with this, you know, the front.
Yeah, the pose. Yeah, there was like a painting, right? Pose. Yeah.
And then there was Arnold, you know, doing a double bicep, and Lou Ferrigno. And it was just, I got to be in that office, and it was just such a great experience to be in there, you know. And then all the artwork that Joe collected. It was, you know, I was really like honored when Joe did a painting of me. When you went in the hallways, you had all the bodybuilders, you know, these great paintings.
Yeah.
And then Joe invited me to the office, and he goes, "Oh, Richie, look, I got your painting in here. We just made it." And it was like, you know, it was on the wall.
That had to be amazing.
I got my painting on the wall and with all these great bodybuilders here. I'm on this wall in this office.
Wow.
And people can see, you know, and admire. It was so cool. I'd actually like to know where all that artwork went.
Yeah, me too. Know? Yeah.
Where is all that?
They sold the building, I think. You know, so I don't know what it is now, but it's empty.
Isn't there a Joe Weider Museum?
I don't know.
I heard there's a Joe Weider Museum in Texas.
Oh, really? Okay. Well, I think, who was it? Terry Todd and his wife. Terry passed away, but Jan Todd, I think they have, it's called the Stark Center, and it's in, I think it might be Austin, Texas. And they have a lot of old stuff there, but yeah, I think you're right. I think Joe contributed a lot of stuff there too.
Yeah,
or like old articles and things like that. You know,
I think Betty Weider gave all the art to this place where there's a Joe.
Oh, okay. Oh, really? Okay, that's interesting. I'd like to go check that place out one day.
But you went into Joe's office. You had like statues of what is his name, Louis Cyr.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah,
the strong man.
Yeah,
you know. It was just, I remember it to me, it was like a kid in there, like, oh my God, look at this stuff. This is so cool. And, you know, I remember getting to that office where Joe Weider was, and all the antiquities he had in his office.
Yeah.
And then I got to know Joe really well, and then got to go in his home when he invited me to have lunch in his house.
That's cool.
And then he would invite me into the house, and then he'd go up these stairs, and he collected signatures.
Oh, okay.
So he had like documents. He had the World War One surrender, World War One surrender, Germany surrendering. He had the World War Two surrender. He had signatures of Copernicus, who basically came up with elliptical orbits.
Hmm.
I'm like, wow, that's how I know. I didn't know who Copernicus was, but then I saw.
Yeah, I don't either.
Who's Copernicus? But he collected. He was into collecting like signatures of all these famous people. But then you would go to his office upstairs, and he had this big office, and he had this big, you know, one of those light tables.
Yeah.
So you could look at the slides.
Yeah. I've seen pictures of that. Yeah.
He would have that on in his house for, you know, photos.
Yeah.
And magazines.
Yeah.
And he would show me, "Oh, Richie, come here. I'm going to show you what I'm going to put you on the cover in a magazine article on you." And he showed me that. So that was really, really cool. That's, you know, I got to experience that a lot of guys could probably never get to experience.
No. Yeah. Bodybuilding definitely lost something when we lost Joe, because he had such passion and heart for the sport, man. That'll never be replaced, I don't think, you know.
And I talked about in my documentary about Joe Weider. And
yeah, how good. Yeah.
He actually, to me, was like a second dad, because, you know, I got to know him. Any bodybuilder that was during his time that knew him, you know, you could talk to guys like Lee Haney, and they're all going to say like, he really treated me special. But he did that for everybody.
Everybody, right?
Like, you would think, like, you know, I'm his special guy.
Yeah, yeah.
He was like that with me. He was like that with Lee Haney. He was like that, right. You know what I'm saying, with Lee LeBron. Yeah. He was like that with every one of those bodybuilders that he treated like they were like his kids.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, so it was really special in how he was with the bodybuilders.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, Rich, congratulations on the documentary. Let me know when it's out, and I'll put it out on the show so we can see it. Hopefully it'll be on one of the streaming services like Hulu or something.
Yeah, he's looking right now that Hulu's already wants to take it, but he wants to look at some other options for you know, where to put it, where we get the most views. And he wants me to start pushing it out on social media, which I will once it's out on streaming video.
Yeah.
I look out for it. And, you know, very, like I said, it's kind of cool seeing your life.
Absolutely. Yeah.
You know, reflect back on your life and what it's about, what it meant.
Yeah. Well, you've done a lot, man. I mean, you know, when you're in our conversation, you know, I mean, you won the Nationals in the universe at 21. That was crazy. Yeah. You know, at such a young age. And then you spent all those years, you know, meeting Joe Weider, meeting all these icons and living your dream and being a pro bodybuilder, competing in Olympia. So, yeah, you had a great life.
No, thank you.
And you're still having a great life. It's not over.
No, it ain't over yet. We're still right. Well, I always say this is the next chapter. You know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly.
The next chapter.
Right.
You know, we're growing older, but I'm still enjoying life and still, you know, I'm still pushing. You know, it's guys that just give up. Like, they, you know, they get to this point in the room and they just stop.
Yeah, yeah.
So there's still an evolution of what Rich Gasparri's about. What am I going to do next? You know, I'm working on my company, you know, Gasparri Ageless. I'm looking at working with doctors on, you know, peptides. And so there's other businesses I'm going to get into.
Yeah.
You know, but and I treat my businesses like bodybuilding. Like, it's me, like, competing, but I'm doing it in a business sense because I
can't
compete anything. You know, I can't compete anymore, but I can still treat those businesses like I did when I was competitive.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Well, we were talking about Bill Pearl, and I remember when I gave him that award, he said to me, if it's guys like you, if you don't keep the sport going, the sport will die. And I'll never forget that, you know. And that's what he always told other younger guys like us, you know, was just keep it going, keep pushing it like he did, you know.
No, I thank you for doing that with your podcast and getting guys like Rick Wayne and, hearing stories that I got to listen to it. I know it's like.
Yeah, I'll send it to you.
Is it three two
parts?
Or three parts?
Yeah. It took me 2 years to get him on, and then he wouldn't stop talking.
He wouldn't stop talking. Have you done Albert Beckles?
Yeah, I did him years ago. Yeah. Yeah.
I've done Albert Beckles. Some of the guys like, but no, it's cool to have all these. Have you done Mike Katz?
Yeah, Mike Katz was one of my first guys, yeah.
So you've done all the, like, a lot of the legends that, are out there. And I know you, you said you wanted to do Dave Draper, but he wouldn't do it. Like, it was one
Dave
guys.
Draper. And I wanted to do Matt Mendenhall, and he wouldn't do it. And then he passed away.
Do it either.
Who would have expected him to pass
away? Have you done Rory Littlemyer?
No, he was kind of sketchy on it. I should try him again, though.
You should try him again, yeah.
Yeah.
I tried getting him to do some, you know, videos with me. We were doing Hunt for Hardcore, and I was trying to get him, you know. I said, I want to come to California. I'd love to get you. I want to tell you, we're big. I mean, he was a mentor to me because he was – I mean, he's like 66, 60. I don't know how old he is,
but he's still
He looks phenomenal. Have you seen what he looks like?
Yeah, he still trains heavy, too. It's unbelievable.
He trains heavy. His arms are still like 20 inches.
I know.
And he's in great shape. He's, you know, he's got this – big dark beard and you know he still looks good.
Yeah,
it'd be good to, you know, I should text him because I follow him on social media. I should say, you know, to do an interview with John Hansen because
the
things we've done, you know, we're the guys that know all the past, and it would be great for John to listen to your story.
I just talked to Red Laurel the other day, or it was like 2 months ago, I think. He was Boyer Pope's mentor.
I know who he is.
Red Laurel. 86, I think.
I remember Red Laurel because when I won the Nationals, it was New Orleans. And I wanted to
go
to Red Laurel's gym. But it was – we were in New Orleans, and I think his gym was in it's that other area. It's another city in Louisiana. It was not close. I was trying to get to Red Laurel's gym.
Yeah.
I wanted to see it because I knew he was with Boyer Co.
Yeah, yeah. But he's in great shape. Him and his wife still travel around the country driving their motorcycles.
Really?
At 86 years old. Yeah. Wow. He's amazing.
See that?
When I talked to him, he said he got up at 2:30 that morning and opened up the gym.
Wow.
Yeah. He still works out. Yeah.
Still works out.
Yeah.
Yeah, you should definitely do him. He'd be great to.
Yeah, I did. I did him a couple months ago. He was the last guy to see Bill Pearl alive. He visited Bill right before he passed.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Yeah.
That's cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. But let's keep it going.
Yeah.
I'll be at the Olympia next week.
Yeah, have a good time out there.
Yeah, I want to see who's going to win that show. Is it going to be Rami, a big Rami again, or is there going to be an upset?
Yeah.
I still think it's going to be big Rami.
I do too. Yeah, that's my prediction. Yeah. But there's so many new guys coming in, it's going to be interesting to see what happens.
That's what's cool. At least there's a lot of new faces because there's going to be a changing of the guard soon.
Right.
Who's the guy who just came in? There's one guy, I guess he was like, was he Naba? Bald guy, really big, you know, from Europe.
Oh, Crizzo?
Crizzo came from...
He was from Rafael's...
So he came from Rafael's organization, won all that.
Yeah.
And then had to go back into the amateurs. He won that right away.
Right.
And then he went into his first pro show, won that.
So
he did two shows, right, to get to the Olympics.
Yeah. Got his pro card and then won his first pro show,
Yeah. So
yeah, he's looking good. It should be interesting. Yeah.
I think he's like a Gary Striden. Looks good from the front, but I don't.
Yeah, weak back. I think
a weak back.
Huge arms and a weak back. Yeah.
Yeah. So he looks good in anything from the front.
Yeah. 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 It's going to be tough. There's going to be like 12 guys that are going to be amazing. You know, if they show up in shape, you know, that is right. It's like,
that's another thing.
Shape, right.
Will Nick Walker, you know, make it to be, you know, shredded? I'm, you know, Nick Walker's from Jersey or some. You know, he's got a little bit, you know, weird, I guess, to shape wise. He's, you know,
but he's kind of doing like what you did, Rich. He's bringing his waist down now, and he's getting more
a lot.
Yeah, I'm surprised at how much he improved his shape. It's amazing. So
yeah, he's actually bringing his size down because he's big enough. There's nobody bigger than him, just except for Rob. No.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
So if this guy comes into conditioning and, you know, and
he looks like he's in condition too. He's been in condition for weeks.
Yeah. And then I saw Hunter Labrada. He looks really good.
Yeah. Yes.
Huge. And he looks, you know, shredded. So it's interesting who's going to do well in the show.
Yeah. Yeah. All right, Rich. Well, thanks for joining me on the show. I know you're busy, but I just wanted to get that word out there about the documentary. And it's always good talking to you. So,
thank you.
Good to talk to you again, and glad things are going so well.
Thank you. Thank you, John. And it's always a pleasure to be on the show.
All right. Thanks, Rich. I appreciate it.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
All right, buddy. Take care. All right. Thanks for listening to another episode of the Bodybuilding Legends podcast. Thanks to Rich Gaspari for joining us on the show. And next week, we will be back with another interview. As I said, hopefully this will be a good one, guys. I'm working on it. I will try to make that happen by next week. I don't want to jinx it, so I'm not going to say who it is, but tune in next week and you'll see. I want to thank our Patreon sponsors for helping to sponsor the Bodybuilding Legends podcast. I could not keep the show going without you guys. So thank you very much to all our new Patreon sponsors and those who have been with us for a long time. If you guys are interested in personal training, online training, I am still working for Pro Physique. I have the link below, so just click on that link. And you can get a training and nutrition program from me. So just check that out below if you're interested. I know we got the new year coming up. The holidays are upon us, but they will be over with in a couple more weeks. So check that out if you're interested in working on your new body for the new year. Also, be sure to check out my YouTube channel under my name, John Hansen. I always put a lot of these videos, interviews that we do on the podcast, I put them up on YouTube as well. And I include a lot of different pictures and videos in the interviews. So they're really cool to see. So check that out. All right. Before I let you guys go, I want to read this article called The Knee in the Back That Made Gaspari Rich. It comes from the December 1985 issue of Flex Magazine. Rich is on the cover of the magazine looking really awesome with his shirt off, leaning against a red car. I'm not sure what kind of car. It looks like a Buick. I'm not a car guy, but... really cool shot. All right. It says, what
angers Richard Gasparri, recent bridesmaid to Night of the Champions winner Albert Beckles. Two things. Ignoramuses who credit his massive muscular to some exotic prostaglandin or massive doses thereof. And those daft disparagers who don't, won't acknowledge his bodybuilding legitimacy. The last is especially nettling, considering the merit of his recent annexation. He's the youngest muscle man ever at a tender 20 years of age to win the prestigious world championships. He was actually 21. Let's get historical. I first saw the Dragon Slayer on the San Jose 1983 national stage betwixt title seekers Paris, Lidlmeyer, Mendenhall, and Christian. A neophyte, Rich managed fifth, while others faded behind the curtain. My next encounter took place when, after Corey and I had translocated to California to produce works of art for one blaster, we rubbed elbows in the local Gold's War Zone in Reseda. No one noticed Richard then. After all, this was the big time, was it not? I mean, look who strained there. Wayne, Haney, Fox Populi, and the ageless wonder Albert Becky Beckles. Gasparri was still celebrating his fifth place finish, so he was overweight. Big hairy deal. I could see the fire in his eyes, the sweat on his brow, and the power in his pectorals. As the days passed, I watched the titanic triceps pound out 350-pound inclines and the quads power through 600-pound squats. This was a New Jersey juggernaut who lived and died for bodybuilding. This was the real Gasparri, 215 pounds of strengthy beef. But as Gasparri's will to win grew, his thinking sharpened. He planned a surprise attack. Soon he would start his shrinking act in order to improve his symmetry and enter the nationals in the world, which he did, earning wins as a light heavy and making believers of everyone. Well, almost everyone. The greaseball quacksters complained and whined that he shouldn't have beaten the German, Remus Romulus, or whatever his alien nonclementure. Then they said he would fade into ripped oblivion, that he was too small and stringy to tangle with the likes of Mountain Mike Christian. Gasparri took exception to their claims. Inside, he knew he was a body in waiting, that he was really 215 pounds of hearty meatballs and not 189 pounds of over-dieted, carb-depleted spaghetti. And there was one more thing. People stabbed his back. Dozens, no less, told him his back was woefully incomplete. He took exception to that, too, and he went into serious training to bring up his rhomboideus insignificus. Yes, the man Lee Haney fondly calls the hardest training bodybuilder in the world did the job. He beefed back up to 210 pounds, and he outbeefed everyone except for Albert. Now the cry is excess artificial aids from all the sitters but not doers in our wonderful sport. To which I answer, take a closer look at Gasparri and others of his ilk. Like Beckles, who are always ready, always in shape. They train with their heads, not the sides of their asses. Now then, disparagers, as for Gasparri's much improved posterior, the one to thank is a wily veteran of the Muscle Wars era with an ailing knee. Rich Gasparri checked the weight stack, grabbed the chrome V handle, braced his feet, and sat back. Up came 300 pounds of iron weight. Gasparri stretched, feeling his lat attachments creak a little as he did so. Instantly, he drew in the biggest gob of stale World Gym air he could collect and yanked the handles to his muscular belly. He drove his head and elbows backward. Without pause, he let the weight pull him back down in one giant eccentric. Stretch out and pull the stack up again, he thought, as he drove his elbows back, again and again. Then he felt an unusual pain. As he struggled upright to make his fifth repetition, he ran into something in the dead center of his back, an impregnable something. Richard was disturbed. He dropped the weight and turned around to see the venerable Joe Gold standing with his right knee planted squarely in what had been Gasparri's rowing path. Try again, Joe said, only this time quit cheating. What do you mean cheating? Just what I said, dildo. You're cheating and swinging the damn weight up. Use your back and squeeze your shoulder blades together. And don't lay back with your body. Lift with your lats and shoulder blade muscles, not your body weight. Anybody else and Gasparri might have punched his face, but not Joe Gold. Joe never said anything that wasn't important. So Rich hopped down and tried again. But it was a no-go. Gasparri's discovered something. When he tried to use strict technique, he couldn't handle anywhere near the weight he used before. He lowered the weight while Joe Gold waited. If you feel my knee, said Joe, you're a cheating ass. Gaspari pulled, stretched, and concentrated. He felt Joe's knee once or twice during this set of 10 reps. Each time he pulled the weight back, he crunched his blades and held the handle at his belly for a second. And when he finished the set, he felt the difference. Sometimes it takes an old knee to build a great back, and sometimes it takes a knife in the back. After my win at the Nationals in the World, several people who I consider friends, came to me and said, Richard, you got to get your middle back up. If it had been three, maybe four people, I would have dismissed it as jealousy. But there were maybe a dozen guys who said it. So I decided to do something about it. But my strategy wasn't very good. It was really Joe Gold who set me straight. I thought all I had to do was bomb the hell out of my back with heavy weights, and that would do the job. It worked on my thighs and chest, for Christ's sake. Why not my back? Simple. I couldn't see my back. I don't have eyes in the back of my head. And the back is such a complex area with so many muscles that simply yanking and tossing big weights about wouldn't do the job. Words of truth from Richard Gaspari, national and world champion, whose training success came from the wise knee of a man who hasn't thought about anything for years other than collecting some idiot's dues. Of course, the guy was behind by 3 weeks. And getting the biggest, juiciest steak in town. But no one has ever thought to accuse Joe Gold of not being one of the sharpest trainers in the world. And even with that ailing back, he's still on top of everybody and everything. Half the reason I suspect that World's Gym is so bleeping popular. Back to Rich. After his win over Romulus Remus, Rich knew he had to get back his vaunted beef. And in the same breath, beef up his back to hold his own with the pros. Joe Gold had provided the inspiration. Now it was up to Rich to train his back, bring up his size, and at the same time add muscle detail, which meant lightening his load and training with more muscle isolation. Gaspari has what it takes. He has the hunger. His mother's disappearing ravioli attests to that. He has the genetics. Rich's stonemason father has those steel-cored forearms that are always the dead giveaway of a powerful man. He also has the dedication and intelligence to train hard and properly, which he did. The culmination was a stunning second-place finish in the IFBB's New York Night of the Champions. Even the most fervent of the Gaspari downsiders noticed the unmistakable improvement in Rich's back. Here's the routine and philosophy behind that change. The assessment? My traps were good. They grow easy. My lower lats were thick, but sort of tapered into nothingness. My back center was shallow, no real depth, and I needed more width to my back. The days. I do a double split like always. On day one, I do biceps and calves in the morning, chest and abs in the evening. Day two, I come in with just my back, prioritizing the living hell out of the mother. Evening, shoulders. Day three, legs and calves in the morning, tries, hams, and lower back after dinner. The method? Staying on the double split system, I decided to stress movement, concentration, and tension instead of the amount of weight. This was a major difference from my previous training philosophy. The philosophy, stay lean, but gain muscle size slowly. I weighed 191 at the World. I slowly built to 212 for the Night of the Champions. 5 weeks before the show, I stopped everything but bodybuilding. I mean, every second revolved around preparing for that show. I trained 3 hours in the morning, 3 hours in the evening, and spent an hour a day on the posing and aerobics. The diet. For 8 months, I took 40 aminos a day. I scoffed lipos and vitamins. I ate 6 to 8 egg whites a day with loads of low-fat cottage cheese, chicken, broiled fish, unsalted, unbuttered vegetables, and twice a week, rare London broil. And I drank low-sodium drinks. The training. I wanted width, so I started every back session with moderately wide chin-ups. To the front one day and to the back the other. I do 10 reps with no help, really squeezing my blades together. Getting my elbows back and stretching at the bottom. I'd always think arch, arch, arch. I'd get 4 sets with 2 extra force reps on each set. I'd move fast, never even bother for sips of water. I'd rest just as long as it took my partner to do his set. My second exercise was for middle back thickness. I learned to appreciate bent over rows with an Olympic bar from Lee Haney. Again, I reduced my weights from 275 to 225 pounds. Using a pronated grip, I'd slowly pull the bar to my belly button. At the top, I'd squeeze and squeeze the mother. I'd use straps and stand on a 4-inch board for stretch. Never did I round my back. I always arched it to hit my lats. I'd start with 135 pounds and jump to 185 pounds, 205 pounds, and then 225 pounds, all for 8 to 10 reps for 4 to 5 sets. The big difference is the squeeze and the 1 second hold at the top. You got to quit thinking about blasting it up and instead think squeezing and holding. Next exercise, T-bar rows for the low center back. That's where I feel it because of the way I do it. I bend my knees and I keep my body low. I pull the bar low and again, squeeze my blades tight and then hold it at the top. My grip is with straps and it's kind of narrow, I guess. I get the best feel that way. Again, 4 sets of 8 to 10 reps using a pyramid, but I'll stress the feel, not the weight. I always like to do 8 to 10 reps for mass and thickness. Then for my 4th exercise, I do long pulley rows. I get stronger each set, so I raise the weight 10 to 20 pounds each time. Instead of swinging and heaving like before, I think about Joe's knee and my back. I stretch and pull the V-handle to my lower stomach. Nothing mysterious, just stricter than before, with less weight and a lot of squeeze. I guess I start with around 200 pounds, and I move progressively up to 240 pounds. In the past, I used to crank damn near 300 pounds, but what I do now works much better for my back. I do 4 sets of these, again, for about 8 to 10 reps each set. So altogether, I do about 16 to 20 sets for my back, around 8 to 10 reps. Sometimes I do close grip pulldowns on a lat machine with a reverse grip. I now concentrate so much on my back muscles that I hardly pump my biceps. If I include a bicep work, I usually end up doing just a couple sets of 8 to 10 reps. That's it. I move fast and I train with super concentration and isolation. I lowered my weight down and I haven't seemed to suffer for it. On Rich's leg day, he includes 2 exercises for his lower back. After his hamstring curls, he does 5 sets of 8 to 10 reps of stiff-legged deadlifts. He stands on a 4-inch block and uses no more than 225 pounds. Then he does hyperextensions with a 25-pound plate for 3 sets of 15 reps. So that's Gaspari's new back routine. Take a close look at it. It's not fancy. No supersets, not a lot of forced reps, no negatives, nothing eclectic. What he does is isolate and concentrate. The moral, it's not how much you lift, but how you lift that counts. Or you can learn a lot from a good knee in the back. All right. Excellent article by Jeff Everson, the late Jeff Everson, Corey Everson's husband, ex-husband. Great article. Gref was a great writer for Flex Magazine and Muscle and Fitness back in the day. And man, we missed those articles, huh? Oh, what a great article about how to train and all the different nuances that Rich learned about training his back. All that stuff, unfortunately, is gone. We've been replaced with YouTube. So hope today's bodybuilders are learning a lot from the YouTube channels they watch, because the magazines, unfortunately, are gone. All right, guys. Well, that's it for this week's episode of the Bodybuilding Legends podcast. We will talk to you guys next week with another episode of the Bodybuilding Legends podcast. Until then, stay safe, train hard, and we'll see you guys next week. Take care.